If you don't make identity security easy for them to do and do it securely, they're going to find a way around it. And then it just opens up holes that can cause those attacks to come in.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas at Semperis. It seems as though recognizing identity at the core of modern security has finally penetrated the mainstream. For example, the theme of Gartner's IAM summit in December was identity at the core. But actually implementing identity security is a slower process than just declaring it. As always, we tend to think of technology first when implementing an identity security program. But there's a tendency to leave the other two legs of the stool, people and process, behind. What are some of the organizational and cultural aspects of implementing an identity security program? My guest today is Angie Klein, IAM Business Technology Manager at Federated Insurance, where she leads a team of security engineers and identity and access analysts. She holds CISSP, CID Pro, and CISM certifications, and is on the front lines of what it takes to implement an identity security program in business. Welcome, Angie.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we talk about identity security programs, and maybe one of the first questions to ask is, maybe the security people on here are saying, well, we just put identity security into everything else. Why should identity security be its own program?
Yeah, so it really is the forefront, like you've kind of already mentioned. One of my favorite phrases that I heard at a conference several years ago was they're not hacking in, they're logging in. And so with identity kind of being the new perimeter, or not really new, but the perimeter now is if you don't have that program figured out and that secured, then some of the other security things you do don't, I mean, they matter, but they don't matter quite as much as if you don't have your identity in place. That's the first thing those the attackers are going after anymore.
Right. So because of its significance, that identity security needs to be its own program raised up from just a part of anything else.
Absolutely. So people seem to think identity security is so easy and kind of a minimalist thing, but it is very complex. There's a lot of legs to that stool. There's a lot of things to do. And if you try to integrate it with something else that is, it's just a small piece of that team or a small piece of that program, it doesn't do itself justice. You really need to have people that are specialized in identity security, that understand the identity security platforms and programs and projects and all the different complexities that go along with it, in order to really have a successful program and to really be protecting your company and your enterprise from those outside attackers.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to describe in simple terms the complexity of a modern identity, hybrid identity system. And I sort of ended up with horizontal and vertical. I mean, if you take Active Directory on-premises, which we all have, I think of it very horizontally in that it's a distributed application with domain controllers all over the place. Mm-hmm. And as if that's not complicated enough, now we go vertical up into the cloud. And so you have got the horizontal complexity, or the width, if you will, of on-prem, with now the hybrid complexity of being into the cloud. And then if that isn't complicated enough, many organizations are, for lack of a better word, multi-hybrid, where they have multiple cloud identity providers, making it even more complicated to keep track of what is going on where. So I think, as we said, identity is widely acknowledged as being critical, but many programs stall or fail. Why does that happen?
Honestly, a lot of it, I think, is the friction, because when you put identity security in, there's friction there. It's not just hey, I can open my laptop and go do something. You have to log in. Maybe you have to multi-factor. Maybe you don't have the security to everything you need because they're doing least privilege and you're only getting a small
Yeah.
piece of security, and now your job changed and need to do something else. Another piece of it too is as you start trying to reduce that security so that you are least privileged, so people only have the access they need, or there has to be approvals in place or multi-factor there. Some of your, especially what I have found is some of your like admins or Windows Server admins or other admins in your environment are like, wait a second, now I can't do what I need to do quickly. But really, you can. And as an identity program, the goal should really be helping people do their job securely, not taking things away that they need, and helping them understand why they need to do it securely. So what I have found too in doing these programs and doing these projects is you really have to explain that why. You have to understand the risk behind doing it kind of like as they always have, but then changing it. So it's really the resistance. And I wouldn't say that resistance is failure necessarily. I think it's a signal that you need to change something or use organizational change management to help them understand.
Right. And you're right. It is a question of friction. And how do you balance the friction? I always go back to a quote from my colleague, Gil Kirkpatrick. And I'll paraphrase it slightly. He said long ago that nobody cares about identity but identity people. To everybody else, it's just a speed bump to getting things done. And I would amend that to say identity security, same way. For example, we've implemented passkeys here at Cerberus, and you get the friction of the change for that, even though as a technical organization, we recognize the need for it, but ultimately people are people and they just want to get their stuff done. And especially technical people will go to extraordinary lengths to try to work around some of these things, even if it may not be quite the right thing for the organization.
Yeah, that's definitely something we have seen where if you don't make really security in general, but especially identity security, easy for them to do and do it securely, they're going to find a way around it. And then it just opens up holes that can cause those attacks to come in.
Right, because that's always the way it works. So let's talk about one of the aspects of a program, and this is one of the people aspects of the program, and that is is organizational change management or OCM. And anytime you're making a change in the organization, but first off, maybe for starters, why don't you explain to us what OCM is. And by that, I don't mean evaluating and deploying patches into production via change management board. And that's what I thought it was when the first time I heard that. I went, wait, what is that?
No, organizational change management or OCM is something that I really latched onto several years ago, kind of working through a fairly large project here that was going to move people's cheese and move people away from processes that they've done for years.
Right.
And so, really, how I kind of boil OCM down is helping people understand the reason you're doing something in language that they understand. Like talking to them, if they're technical, use the technical verbiage. If they're not technical, well, then you better not be using the technical verbiage to, you need to talk to them in ways they understand. Or like, we're an insurance company. We manage risk. So the way we sold the program was helping them understand that this was going to manage the risk to our organization. Also, like bringing people on board early that are going to be what I call champions for your program. Those people that have some influence over their area, maybe a seasoned Windows admin or a seasoned Linux admin or a network administrator that is bought into what you're trying to do, bring them along for the ride from the beginning. Because when they do it and when they use their influence, that helps then other people buy into that as well. But really, managing people in understanding why you're doing something and helping them buy into that reason And if they have feedback is okay as part of this process too. But making sure that's a two-way street too, where you're listening to them, you're understanding where they're coming from. Sometimes you might be able to make some changes into your process or what you're doing because of their feedback. And other times you might have to just be like, well, no, I hear you. I understand where you're coming from, but I really need you to change your process because of this reason.
Right. So it's about making sure that everybody is heard, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily feeling like they're being stampeded into it with no acknowledgement of their concerns or their thoughts on the matter.
Correct. I kind of like to say it's not security pushing another initiative down somebody's throat and just telling them that they have to do it. It's partnering with them to understand the process and understand the initiative together.
That historically has definitely been the purview of, if you'll pardon the phrase, it has been the purview of security is telling other people what to do. One of the things that's come out, if we have to find something positive that's come out of the cybercrime spree that we've been going through, mm-hmm. is the fact that your average employee, the idea of protecting the organization is no longer as abstract as it used to be. As you see everybody, all organizations around you being attacked and being compromised, it's a very real thing. It's not an abstract concept to know that it could and potentially will happen to you. So
absolutely.
In terms of the cultural aspects, you know, this was 10 years ago or no more than that, 15 years ago, probably being at a Gartner conference in the early days of cloud computing and them bringing up, what are the barriers to cloud adoption in this keynote presentation? And one of them was cultural resistance, which I had never really considered before. And of course, cloud, has been one of the really big shifts in modern computing. And so they brought up cultural resistance because you're really talking about moving resources away from their direct control. And for me, that was kind of an aha moment, like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. So what are some of the cultural aspects to be aware of? You talked about resistance, but where do OCM and an identity security program intersect? Do you have any specific examples from your experience where you needed to apply some OCM magic to make things work a little better?
Yeah, so one of our projects, it's been several years now, but it was a PAM project, Implementing Privileged Access Management. And that is a big one because people are like, no, I have access to my servers whenever I want it. Why do you have to move this? But being able to really explain to them that, you know, your user ID that you're logging into the servers with is the same user ID that you have internet access to, or you have your emails on. And those are the big attack vectors. And so if somebody gets access to that credential, they can now access your server and shut your application down or do something else, you know, or just so putting it in the terms that they understood was a huge thing. But, you know, like right now I'm working through a project or a research project, really, in working on how do we make our identity security and our onboarding, offboarding more automated? And how can we integrate with some of these different tools or our HR systems or some of that type of stuff? And the way I'm starting that project is really just seeking to understand the current processes. How do people work today? Where do they see efficiencies happening? Where do they see some things that could be potentially changing? And kind of just working with them through the project, but also helping them understand, like, if we can get this accomplished, here's where we can land on our program. Here's what we could do. Now, what steps can we take to get there? And let's partner together and work together. I mean, not just within the IT department, but in our HR department, in our various other departments that are working together on this process, to just figure out a way to make it so that everybody understands and that it's more efficient for everyone, not just for one particular department?
Right. And you sort of obliquely referred to something that has really become critical in recent times, and even more so now, is governance. And the fact that governance, and let's face it, in most organizations, governance is an afterthought. More better in regulated organizations like yours, like your own and in your industry. But if you were to survey the on-prem identity systems of a broad swath of organizations, I'm sure we would be appalled at how little governance is actually happening. And by practically speaking, by governance, I mean identity lifecycle management. I mean the create, read, update, delete, get rid of things that don't need to be there, make sure everything has every organ, every security principle has an owner, and groups are reviewed for relevancy, because that's not only, I mean, up to this point, that's an enormous attack vector of stale accounts and all of that. But now, going forward, with the advent of agentic AI, and you know, the incredible proliferation of independent agents with no governance of any kind, it's gone from being important and neglected to mission critical and neglected. And
No, absolutely.
you know, even those of us that are identity, that think of identity as a cool thing, and I still have to tell myself that other people don't think that. Even to us, governance is, most of us, governance is not really exciting, but it's just so super important. So how do you gain buy-in for an identity security program, which, you know, governance is part of that as well, but I mean, obviously there are multiple steps involved, but just generally, if someone is listening to this and going, yeah, you know, we just treat identity security along with everything else. We got a guy, you know, and but maybe we should elevate it to a program level. And I need to talk to my managers about it, which of course needs budget. How do I, you know, how do I gain buy-in from management for such a thing?
So I always say start with what you have and map out what you're doing today. And then think strategically, come up with a vision of where you want to be tomorrow. You know, maybe you're doing manual provisioning today and you want to do automated lifecycle tomorrow. Okay, now what phases can you do to get there? And sell each phase, not necessarily independently, but almost as like a roadmap. So you've got this roadmap mapped out as far as, okay, here's where I want to get to. Here's why I want to get there. Here's what risk it's going to help reduce, or here's what it's going to help here, how it's going to make more people more efficient. Maybe they're using the provisioning as an example. People are going to get their security quicker. There's not going to be as long of a turnaround. The offboarded accounts are going to happen right away, so we don't have those stale accounts sitting there. Maybe it's an audit checkbox. I don't always like to use audit as a reason for doing things because that feels like a hammer trying to hammer things in, saying, hey, we have to do this. But sometimes audit can be your best friend. If you're really trying to get something done and there is an audit finding, that can help you get there a little bit faster sometimes. Sometimes it gets you budget. But really mapping out, making sure there's clear direction, you're managing risks. Sometimes, too, it comes down to, is your organization ready for that yet? Maybe there's a baby step you can take now, but maybe your org isn't quite ready to make that full big jump. And that's okay too, as far as what I have seen. Some things too, like you just have to kind of take it slow. This is not one big bang approach. An identity program is definitely not one big bang. You're going to get it in a year and be done. It is an ongoing thing. It takes time. It takes analysis. It takes design. I know a lot of our technical people, and myself included, we see a problem, we like to just jump in and try to solve it. But if we take that step back and do that analysis and that design work first, typically our solution is a little bit better. And we can implement it a little better versus just jumping right in and trying to, come up with a plan. Communication is also a big aspect too.
What about the idea of the sort of the quick wins concept, where
Yeah.
to prove to management, can you expand on that perhaps a little bit?
Absolutely. So one thing I have done and I have seen done at various places too, like, we're trying to say automate all of lifecycle management. Maybe the first step is you could automate offboarding. Is there one piece that you could do? Could you automatically disable a user ID when a request is submitted? Or is there a small little thing that you can do to work towards your end goal that might not get you fully there, but at least there's something done. And maybe even it might be something that might require rework later, but it increases your efficiency today and it increases what you're doing today and shows the management, shows the leadership that there is some efficiency gains, there is some value to continuing to move this program or project forward.
Right. Yeah. The idea of, oh, look, we saved some time, or we saved a few bucks, or, something that you can relate back to. Well, I was going to say related to the business, but it really depends on who the stakeholder is. It could be, if it's a security manager, it could be, look, we've reduced our risk from stale accounts, or, you move steps forward like that.
Or even like, hey, the auditor asked about how we do offboarding, and we were able to tell him we did it automated this year.
Right.
Like there's one more checkbox done on the audit report, not just for checkbox sake, but because it actually helped our program.
Right. And certainly the historical, the scary parts of implementing an improved identity security, identity governance program. I think of not to point fingers, but a provisioning application like SailPoint, very complicated, very expensive, takes a long time to start making the business impact out of it, that it could be. And the idea behind the quick wins is to have more baby steps to say, look, see, we know what we're doing. We're actually helping along the way when your manager's manager says, so what am I getting for my budget out of this?
Like you mentioned, like an identity security program, like implementing SailPoint or a Savient or one of those tools like that, it's huge and it takes a while. And I think that's why a lot of those implementations either fail or stall is because it takes so long. But if you set a clear roadmap and a clear direction and a clear project plan and saying at this point, we're going to have 20% of our roles done and then 30% of our roles done and then 40%, like mapping that out ahead of time, I have found has been invaluable to leadership in saying, here's our plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to report to you and tell you how we're doing. The communication is there. That is key. Communication is key in all of this. And making sure that they understand also, like I always like to say, like every project is not sunshine and roses. Something is going to go wrong. So you got to figure out a way around it. And you have to figure out, okay, how do you pivot? What do you do to change so you can keep your project on the roadmap? Or maybe you have to adjust your roadmap based on whatever comes up. But being in constant communication with your leadership, with the management that has that budget or that is asking those questions is always key.
What would you say some of the first steps of an identity security program are? What are the first things that you should do as you're trying to put this together?
I always say some of the things you absolutely need as far as the first things you were going to implement would be multi-factor authentication. If you don't have that, you should figure out a way to turn that on. Obviously, that does inc it includes some friction. It does, because it adds friction to people. But that is very key to helping protect your accounts. And then figuring out like your password policy, figuring out your identity governance, even if it's a spreadsheet of here's what everybody has and people review it, at least it's a starting point and it's somewhere you can start with.
What about from a management viewpoint, as far as setting up a program like this?
From a management standpoint, I would say mapping, it kind of goes back to like the mapping out what you currently have, maybe comparing it to like a NIST framework or some of those, whatever you might compare your program to, you know, having some calls with some identity experts in the industry, whether that's a Gartner or an IANS or a whoever, to try to, get some ideas of how to move your program forward, maybe doing a gap analysis with a vendor that you work with on a regular basis, to kind of figure out and prioritize what you need to do, because priority is also key there. You can't boil the ocean, you can't do everything at
Right,
once.
right.
So, you know, prioritizing those and then also, you know, taking that first small step, gaining buy-in for that first small step. And then moving it forward.
How about and the aspects of management and management ownership? Your program's going to be elbowing for resources with other programs. So this being sort of an organizational spin to things, where what do you do about management? How do you have to, you can't have everybody do everything. So how do you do that? What are your, in terms of finding management support in that? And
Sure. One big thing I have found is really helping them understand how it reduces risk. Typically, management don't like they just don't like risk at the organization. If you find something that says like, hey, because I'm going to use MFA as an example, because we don't have MFA in place, somebody can easily log into account if they get that credential. There's not an extra stopping point there. But also speaking to it in terms that they understand and that they relate to. So risk is a big one, or helping the business achieve their goals. If you can do something that is going to make them be able to move faster or them be able to achieve their goals, that's going to help you gain some buy-in there too.
risk is obviously you have a leg up in this department because your company is all about risk. And historically, and I speak for myself, I never really thought of in terms of risk concepts working in enterprise IT. But now that everybody's being attacked, risk is a much more personal, and frankly, I map it back to COVID as well, where you realize that everybody, you do your own risk analysis, as you would go into a public place, or should you have a mask, or shouldn't you have a mask? Because nobody wants to wear a mask. And so you look at situation and you go, can I get away with it? So we're all doing our own risk analyses
Right.
all the time, for everything. But yeah, I'm a big proponent of making sure that everybody understands the risk aspects of it, because number one, it's fundamental. Number two, that's how you talk to management, all the way up to the board, is risk. And if you can't, if you're a line level identity professional, or if you're a first level manager, and you need to talk up about all this, the more you can talk in terms of risk and mitigating that risk, then the more successful that you'll be.
Absolutely.
We had talked before about the foundational pieces of a successful identity security program. Do you have any thoughts on what those pillars should be around a foundational program, or foundational pillars should be around a program?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about it a little bit already, but we talked about governance. Governance being a big piece of that. Otherwise, you end up with like security sprawl, and somebody has all of a sudden has access to like everything when they shouldn't.
And you have actually said governance first, not
Yes.
and oh, by the way,
Yes.
and now that
Absolutely.
you now that you've got 20,000 service accounts, you should look into governance.
Yes. It should be number one, but it's everybody's least favorite. So everybody pushes it to the bottom. Lifecycle management is another one, whether you do it automated or not. Like having that joiner, mover, leaver process in place, having timely access removals when someone leaves, especially is the very valuable piece, and having some sort of process in place for the joiners and movers throughout the organization when people come, when they transfer roles, when they move to a different position, a way to manage all of that.
Take away the old stuff. Don't let it just
Take
keep
away the old stuff,
accumulating.
add the new stuff. That's where the governance comes into play as well. Again, a constant review, all of that. And then the third one is just security controls. So putting MFA places that everywhere that it makes sense. There's some regulations out there for different industries that require it now, which I think is great. Not everybody does, but MFA is something that if you don't have that, that's kind of a foundational pillar to identity security. And even just like controlled privileged access as well. So not allowing people to just log on to any server anytime and do admin level permissions, having that controlled domain admins, enterprise admins, those types of things really controlled to only the people that need it. And a separate account at
The
all possible.
basics, the very
The
basics.
very basics. The next pillar, you had mentioned it earlier, but culture and adoption. So having those training things in place, clear expectations, and also those feedback loops. So as something gets implemented, there is a way, whether you pilot it with a small group of people first, or whether it's rolled out organization-wide, you have a way to get feedback. And that you can make modifications and changes based on what people are telling you. You're ingrained in that program and you're ingrained in maybe those service requests that are coming in and all of those things. Like you talk that talk. But as soon as you push that out to the organization wide, they might not understand what you're asking on that request that they need to fill out or different things like that. So you need to be able to pull that feedback in and make changes. Which goes into the last pillar of continuous improvement. Taking that feedback, making changes, and then also just thinking strategically on saying, okay, what's next? What else can we do? The success of an identity program is really more measured by the behavioral changes that happen, not necessarily like the dates that deployments happen, but it really boils down to the people. And their behavioral changes, and that they're not finding ways around the controls that you're putting in place.
And I suppose one aspect of it being a program as well is that it's never ending. It's not a
Correct.
project where we're implementing SailPoint or we're implementing Savvy.
Correct.
It's an ongoing, as you say, what's next? Continuing to move, continuing to change, because certainly the battle keeps changing.
Yes, the
So do you have any final thoughts or advice in this subject? Or maybe
yes.
or what or maybe of the very of the stuff that we talked about, what are really the things that you want people to leave with?
Sure. So if you are a leader in security or that looking at an identity program, just remember to think in terms of a program, not projects. There might be several projects underneath that program that create it, but as Sean just said, It is a program. It is not something that you are continually changing. And also investing in that change management early, like bringing those other people in to the project, to the program, to the ideas early on to develop those champions so you're not just hammering something in that you hope works. And also prioritizing the people's experience as much as the security outcomes. Again, if it's something that they don't like and they can't do it easily, or it's just integrated in what they do, they're going to find ways around it, which then you have more problems. And celebrate the small wins. Everything builds momentum. You get MFA integrated, or maybe you're changing your MFA platform. You get that in, you get minimal calls, everybody gets registered. Yes, that's one good thing. Let's stamp in the book. Now let's move to the next thing.
Right.
But really, like, identity security is ultimately about trust. People have to trust that you are doing the things that will help them do their job securely and not stop them from doing their job. They're still going to be able to do what they need to do, but yet do it securely. That's going to help secure your organization. That's really, honestly, the big piece of it there.
Right. I really think about, the iceberg analogy here, where the technology is just the very tip of the iceberg. It's all of the processes, it's all of the people, and it's everything behind it that you have to do. Maybe there's a maxim here, and I'm sure someone has already used it, that it's easy to implement security so that it messes people up. It's hard to implement security so that people accept it and it has minimal friction.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Angie. I appreciate the conversation. I think this is an important area that doesn't get talked about enough. And as organizations are more focusing and recognizing the centrality and the importance of identity, the more reason to be considering having them to be their own programs.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Sean.
Thanks so much for listening to the HIP podcast, brought to you by Semperis, the leader in identity resilience. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please give us a rating or leave us a review, as that really helps other listeners find the show. You can find past episodes and more information at hipconf.com/podcasts. I'm Sean Doobie. Stay secure, and I'll see you in the next one.